Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and welcome to Impact Symposium. 42 years ago, students at Vanderbilt created this program to promote increased enthusiasm, awareness, and discussion of controversial issues and current events. Since then, Impact Symposium has been proud to host speakers such as Martin Luther King Jr., Robert F. Kennedy, Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, Jimmy Carter, and George Bush. Tonight, we continue that tradition. John Edwards received his law degree from the University of North Carolina in 1977. I could go on with his biography, but he told me not to. He said just to mention that he was a candidate for president and a candidate for vice president and a former U.S. senator. Without further ado, I give you Senator John Edwards.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. What a pleasure to be with all of you. You know, I lived in Nashville, actually, about 25 years ago. For a couple of years, practiced law here, and I'm always glad to come back. We have lots of friends in Nashville. Let me start by giving a brief report on how my wife Elizabeth's doing, because people always ask when I'm traveling how she's doing. Some of you, I'm sure, know that she was diagnosed with breast cancer the day after the election. The good news, I always knock on wood when I say this, but the good news is Elizabeth's doing great. She's doing very, very well. I want to give you a little bit of a glimpse into what politics does to the families involved by telling you a story, true story. We live in Chapel Hill now. I'm the director of a poverty center at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And my kids are in public school in Chapel Hill. And some of you will remember my younger children. My oldest daughter, Kate, is 24, and she lives in New York now, works for Vanity Fair magazine. But my younger kids, Emma Claire, 7, and Jack, who's 5. And I went with them to school the first day. Took him to school. So I took Jack into his kindergarten class, and some of the parents recognized me and wanted me to take pictures with them and with their kids, which was fine. I was happy to do it. Well, this one woman came over to me after I'd been there for a while and said, "Would you mind taking a picture with my son, Jose?" And I said, "Yeah, I'd be glad to." And she said, "Jose, Jose." And, you know, Jose's like every other kid, a 5-year-old kid on the planet. He walks over, shuffling his feet, looking at the floor. And so Jack, my Jack, is across the room watching this whole scene. So he watches for a few seconds, and then he comes running across the room, and he says, "No, Jose, it's like this." Ruined at 5 years of age. Already ruined. I want to start tonight. I'm going to try to keep this speech relatively short because I want to answer your questions. But I want to start by telling you something that I just experienced last week. I was lucky enough, blessed enough, to be able to lead 700 college and university students from around the country, from over 80 colleges and universities, down to New Orleans to work during their spring break. These kids, like students from Vanderbilt, did the same, I'm told, came down to try to do some work on the houses that had been destroyed instead of going to the beach, which is an extraordinary, remarkable thing. And watching them, we were working in St. Bernard's Parish. First of all, if you just picture in your mind's eye, it is nasty, dirty work and hot, really hot, because you have to wear these suits to protect you. And it was very, very hard work. I know because I was in there doing it with them. And I'm 52 years old. I was tired. But these young people were amazing, absolutely amazing. I've never seen anybody work harder. And that was so good and so inspirational. The problem was, right up against it, juxtaposed with that kind of extraordinary service, was the government. And I have to tell you, we were in St. Bernard's Parish. We worked on probably 50 houses during the time we were there. I never saw a government employee. Never saw anybody who works for the government working. Never saw anybody who works for the, I'm talking about it, where we were. Never saw anybody coming by to see how things were going. I asked the residents whose houses we were working on, where do you get help? Who do you see? And they told me the only people they ever see are volunteers who come to help. I mean, this is such an extraordinary failure of government and leadership. I mean, this is at a monumental level. I can't tell you how strongly I feel about it. This is one of those things where a natural disaster, where the people who were hurt were not at fault, they've done nothing wrong, where their government, who they've been paying taxes to most of their lives, their government has to be there for them. And here we are all these months. I've been down to Louisiana and New Orleans several times since the hurricane. You can't tell, I mean, in the places that were devastated, the lower Ninth Ward, the upper Ninth Ward, St. Bernard's Parish, you can't tell any difference. It looks exactly like it did 2 weeks after the hurricane hit, which is absolutely remarkable. This is a perfect example of why America so desperately needs leadership today. And I want to talk tonight, during the time that I'm speaking before I take your questions, about what I think is the great moral issue of our time. It's the issue that I'm spending most of my time on these days, which is that 37 million people wake up in our country every day in poverty. And I don't see this as a complicated issue. For me, it's a very simple issue. The solution's not simple, but our responsibility is simple. It's wrong, and we ought to do something about it. We ought to give these families a chance to do better for themselves. And first time I went to Louisiana after the hurricane hit, I was in, and by the way, all of you know this, I mean, what happened as a result of Katrina is their eyes were opened for so many Americans to what poverty really is in America. I mean, they saw the face, you saw the face of poverty streaming into your living rooms on your television sets. And as a result, this window of opportunity opened. The country's paying attention. The country cares. The country's conscience was touched. But the problem is, it is the nature of things that people go back to their lives. You know, they're busy. They're worried about their kids. They're worried about their families. They're worried about their jobs. The result of that is, without leadership, these things fade away and they die away, which is what we saw in New Orleans last week. When I went down to Baton Rouge right after the hurricane hit, I was in an evacuee center in Baton Rouge, a place that most of the evacuees there were from the lower Ninth Ward. Now, you all remember the lower Ninth Ward, the lowest lying, poorest area in New Orleans, places that got hurt the worst. Looks like an atomic bomb went off there. I was walking through shaking hands with people who were in line to get help. And I was walking, I came on this one guy, sort of strong, stocky built guy, probably in his early 40s, I'd guess. And I said, "How are you?" And he said, "Well, I'm okay, but I lived in the lower ninth. My home was flooded, lost my home." But he said, "Even worse than that, I lost my job." He said, "The place I worked for 23 years is now underwater, and they've told me they're not going to reopen." And he said, "Senator, I don't know anything but work. It's all I've ever done," he said, "to support my family." And then you have to picture in your mind's eye for just a minute, this guy is sleeping on a sleeping bag about probably 10 feet from where we were standing. And he said, "But you know, I got here 10 days ago. And when I arrived, they told me that if you go out front at 5 o'clock in the morning, sometimes men will come by in pickup trucks and pick you up and put you to work." He said, "So every day since I've been here, I've been out front at 5 o'clock. He said, "They haven't picked me up yet, but they're going to." This guy represents what America is supposed to be about: hard work, responsibility, family. One of the things that I've been able to do over the last year, I ended up with a little time on my hands. Not by choice. Is I've been traveling all over the country meeting with families who either live in poverty or near the poverty line. I've done it in most of America now. And it's been a remarkable experience for me. If you go, and some of you know this already, I'm sure, but if you go to a community center or a poverty center where they're trying to help families who are struggling, mostly what you see are women. And mostly what you see are single mothers. These women don't just work. They work two or three jobs. Many of them are working for minimum wage or close to it. They have no health care benefits. They have no pension. They have no no kind of retirement security. And they work 14, 15 hours a day, literally. Why do they do it? Because they love their kids. Because they don't want their kids to have the hard life that they've had. Because they want them to have a better and easier life. Hard work, responsibility, family. This is the America that I believe in. I think it's the America that most Americans believe in. And one of the things that I have learned as a result of traveling all over the country for the last 3 years, doing campaigning both as a presidential candidate and then as a vice presidential candidate, is, first, I don't have all the answers. I wouldn't claim to. I do have some ideas about what we can do about poverty, and I'll talk about them in a minute. But I am certain of one thing. There is a hunger in America, a hunger to be inspired, a hunger to be engaged in something big and important, a hunger for a sense of national community. The American people understand something, and they understand it very well, that what we do together matters because it says something about who we are, what our character is, what is America really made of. And they're looking. By the way, you don't have to take my word for this. Look at what happened on the Gulf Coast. The government's response after the hurricane, including up until now, has been a complete disaster. But not the American people's response. The volunteering, the contributions, the taking of families into communities and incorporating those families into communities. The reason is because the American people care. No, the country does not want to believe, this sense of national community that I talk about, America does not want to believe that they're out there on an island by themselves. If something goes wrong, they're on their own. And I am absolutely certain America's looking for something. And by the way, these young people are a perfect example of it. Last fall, I traveled around to 10 colleges and universities all the way across the country to try to engage young people in the cause of fighting against poverty, and not just by having an event. Every person who came was asked to sign up for 25 hours, if I remember correctly, of community service to engage in advocacy on issues that really matter. And I'll just give you one example. It's true everywhere I went. I'll just give you one example. The last place I went, University of Michigan. They told me when I went, you'll be lucky if 100 kids show up. You know, it's just, and we had a room, a small room, where we were, I said, if 100 is what we get, we'll be happy with that. We'll have 100. And so we had a room. When I got there, the problem was there were almost 4,000 students there. We had to move the thing outside into the quad, and every one of these kids signed up to help people in their own community. I mean, it was absolutely remarkable and inspiring. Those young people, and I'm going to come back to the issue of what college and university students and young people mean for this country in a few minutes, but the truth is they're just evidence of what I'm absolutely certain is true, which is America is looking for something big and important to be inspired by. And I know and I understand that, because I hear it a lot. You know, I hear, we fought a war on poverty. You know, back in the 1960s, and it didn't work. Well, now here's the truth, as I see it. The truth is, did we make some mistakes? Yes, we did. In some cases, the money that was meant to help people ended up in government bureaucracy and never got to the people that needed and deserved the help. Another thing we did is, in some cases, we created dependency instead of independence. All these women that I've been spending countless hours with, they don't want to be dependent. In fact, they will talk endlessly about dignity and respect and being treated with respect. They want to be independent. They don't want to be dependent. But we have to recognize some things. You know, when America does big and important things, when we take on big, difficult challenges, we're going to make some mistakes. We're not perfect. We're human. But, for example, in the case of the war on poverty, we cut the poverty rate in America almost in half, 23 to 12% in just about a decade. It is because of the war on poverty that today we have the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, Head Start, Medicare, Medicaid. I mean, these are ideas and laws that have literally benefited generations, millions of Americans. Some of them have benefited me. And I, by the way, I do recognize that There is an argument by some who would disagree with me about this, about what we should do about this. There is an argument that, well, you know, if you've been successful in your life, you did it on your own. It was your hard work and your responsibility. And if you have failed, it's your failure. Well, all I can say about that is I know it not to be true. I know it from my own life. Now, there's a remote chance that some of you remember that I'm the son of a mill worker, right? I think I managed to say it in every speech I gave for three consecutive years. So, but the truth of my own life is my father borrowed $50 to get me out of the hospital when I was born. Took me home to a little two-room house in a mill village. My folks worked in the mill. My grandparents, who helped raise me, lived right up the street. They worked in the mill. My point is this, though. I've now had everything you could ever have in America. Everything. I didn't get here by myself. I could never have gotten here by myself. Just some simple examples. I had heroic public school teachers who helped educate me. I promise you, it required heroism to educate me when I was young. And then I went to a state university, paid for by taxpayers for my undergraduate education. I went to a state university, paid for by taxpayers for my graduate education. I borrowed money to go to school, funded by taxpayers. None of us get to the place we are alone. It's just not the truth. And what we do together matters. And by the way, what we do for the victims of the hurricane, what we can do for 37 million people who live in poverty, it's not something we do for them. It's something we do for us because it makes us bigger and better and stronger, because it says something about the character of the country that we live in. And I still remember, I see at least a few of you that look, I'm 52 years old, that look old enough to remember the same thing. I remember when I was a teenager watching Bobby Kennedy go through Appalachia and show America the other America that so much of the country didn't know about, didn't want to think about. Michael Harrington had written about it in the early 1960s, helped prompt the war on poverty. This is the kind of leadership and movement we need again. And one of the most startling things to me, from having now spent countless hours with, and I have to tell you, it's become a very personal crusade for me. I'll be the first to admit that to you. I'm like a lot of us, you know, I wake up in the middle of the night sometimes, I can't go back to sleep. And when I can't go back to sleep now, what happens to me is I get the faces of these women in my head, and they won't go away. And what I have realized from all the time I've spent listening to them is they have never had anybody speak for them. They have never had a champion. They've never had an advocate. They don't have any notion that any politician is interested in helping them. And they desperately need somebody to speak for them. By the way, I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about us, because I can't have any effect on this by myself. And this is what I always say to young people on college campuses. You have to be their champion. You have to be their advocate. And I just think there's such an enormous opportunity, and an opportunity to give people a chance to help themselves. And I want to be absolutely clear about something. You're going to hear it in my ideas in a few minutes. I think people that are capable of working need to be working. I think parents need to be responsible for their children. I think we have the right to expect people that we are giving opportunity to be responsible for themselves and to be responsible for their children and to be responsible for their family. I don't think anything's going to work, any ideas are going to work, unless they embrace the values that America believes in. Hard work, responsibility, family. This is the country we live in. It's the country that all of us love so much. So I think there are lots of opportunities to do good out there. I really do. People who think there's nothing that can be done, there are some simple things. Raise the minimum wage. Our national minimum wage is an embarrassment. Yeah, you just have to ask yourselves, who can live? This is not some abstract economic theory. Who can live on $5.15 an hour? No one. You can't live on $5.15 an hour. I've seen hundreds and hundreds of examples of living proof that you can't live on $5.15 an hour. And by the way, since we've not been able to raise it in the Congress, one of the things that we've been doing is I've been helping lead grassroots campaigns, ballot initiatives in a bunch of states, in Ohio and Michigan and Arizona and Montana, several other states, to raise the minimum wage. We'll win. We'll win because the country's for this. The country's for raising the minimum wage. The politicians in Washington are stopping it.